from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio, this is Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, here today for Michael Krasny. In this hour of Forum, imagine raising your kids with no television, no video games, and no sleepovers. A household where every child studies either violin or piano, and A-minuses at school are cause for disappointment and demands for perfection. Well, that's the world author Amy Chua describes in her provocative new book, Battle Hymn of the Tiger Mother. It compares Chinese and Western parenting styles, concluding that American parents coddle their kids with too much praise and too few expectations. The book is generating lots of controversy, and we'll hear why when Amy Chua joins us this hour of Forum, and we'll get started right after this. And welcome back to Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer. Ever wonder why Asian American kids do so well on standardized school tests, often winning spelling bees and music competitions? Well, author Amy Chua chalks it up to the Chinese parenting style. Strict discipline, high expectations, hard work, and an insistence not just on very good, but excellent. A-plus excellent. Nothing less is acceptable. The Yale Law professor writes about it in her new book, Battle Hymn of the Tiger Mother, the story of raising her two young daughters, the youngest of whom, to say the least, didn't go along quietly with mom's orders. Amy Chua, welcome to Forum.
Thanks for having me.
The first thing I want to say is that I thought, the book is very provocative, of course, but it's also very funny.
There
are some things, and let me just read one little sentence here that some people could see as sort of a how-to guide. And you write, the solution to substandard performance, meaning a B+, is always excoriate, punish, and shame the child. Tongue-in-cheek?
Yeah, it's tongue-in-cheek. And I think if you read the book, especially from cover to end, then you realize it's very different than most people are taking it. I mean, it is not a how-to book. In fact, on the very cover, it says, this was supposed to be a story of how Chinese parents are better at raising kids than Western ones, but instead, it's about a bitter clash of cultures and how I was humbled by a 13-year-old. So I do not believe that Chinese parenting is superior. You know, I think there are many ways of being a good parent. I do think that there are strengths to this kind of tough immigrant approach. But yeah, you know, the book is actually filled with things. And once you start seeing me, you know, I'm trying to apply my strict parenting to my two big, fluffy, dopey Samoyed dogs whom I love, I think then people start to realize that a lot of this is supposed to be comic and making fun of myself.
It does sound a bit, though, that you're backing away from things you wrote in the
book. No, I'm not. You know, this is funny. It's a memoir. How can you back away from a memoir? I stand by everything in that book. I mean, as you know, since you've read the book, two-thirds of the way through, there is a giant swerve that doesn't come through in the essay that was published. My younger daughter, Lulu, who's very much like me, she's a real fireball. We've always been very close. I mean, she's always snapping and, you know, we're talking back at each other. It's pretty fun. We have kind of – we have a fun household. People don't always see that. She's now 15, but she rebelled in a very, very serious way. And I don't want to give away the ending, but things got so bad that at one point I realized, oh, my God, this is not what I wanted. I'm going to lose my daughter if I don't stop. And I stopped. I mean, so – It's funny to say backing away, right? Because the story is in a way about my own comeuppance and about my own – it's like a coming of age story, you know?
Well, let me read some of the examples, though, that you write in the book. Some things you did as part of your parenting with your daughters. You rejected two birthday cards your daughters made for you.
I can't wait to talk about that one.
Too simple, not worthy of keeping, you said, and you ordered them to make better ones.
You don't
– Let me just read the other thing.
Okay, great.
You threatened to take your daughter's dollhouse to the Salvation Army if she didn't master a piano composition. And you told one of your daughters you were thinking of adopting another child from China, one who would play the cello, violin, and piano. True? Did you really do those things?
Actually, those are the jokes, okay?
No truth in those whatsoever?
No, but I would do stuff like that. Those were scenes of me, like, worked up in a frenzy and, and my daughter saying, you're insane. The birthday card is completely true. I want to talk about that one because my oldest daughter, Sophia, actually just published an op-ed piece against my preferences defending me. And that story has gotten to be so out of control. People are saying, oh, she rejected these beautifully handmade things. As my daughter wrote, She said, she made these things, and she said, it couldn't have taken me more than 30 seconds. I didn't even sharpen the pencil. And she said, basically, I was busted, you know? And they after, I mean, that's a story we laugh at in our own family because, you know, they know the difference. They felt better after putting in a little effort. And you know what? I'm talking about like 5 minutes effort as opposed to 30 seconds. It wasn't that I locked them up in a closet and said, you know, paint me something. And I think that, I don't know, sometimes I think that Western parents are so afraid to ask for anything. You know, my parents, they earned my respect. And that's what I was surprised by the birthday card story. I completely stand by that. You know, there's, and I thought people would find it funnier. And by the way, some people do, because I said, Lulu, you know, she had given me a piece of paper folded in half with a happy face. And I said, you know, every time your birthday comes along, I spend my entire salary, you know, hiring magicians and making, hand baking, you know, cakes and coming up with games. And I, you know, and I deserve better than this. And the way my daughters have taken it, they completely understand my message. You know, it's about sort of not raising entitled children who just demand more and more, but who have a sense of character and decency and respect and gratitude. I don't know. That's how I take the story. And I hope that's how, I mean, I think that's how my kids take the story.
What about the other examples? Threatening to take the dollhouse to the Salvation Army if she didn't master the
piano composition. Well, that is like a vaudeville scene. You know, I have had, the funny thing is that people reading this book, the excerpt, forget it. People just don't understand. But people reading the book.
Yeah, and just so we know, everyone isn't aware, the excerpt you're talking about in the Wall Street Journal?
Yeah, the title there, which was not my choice.
It was Why Chinese Mothers Are Superior.
And it's written in a very kind of cocky, almost unbearable tone. And some people found it very funny. But that tone, that's sort of, it's like a deadpan humor. That's more like my voice 18 years ago when I, you know, just had my first kid. She was an easy kid. And I was like, what is wrong with all these parents? It's so easy. You just have to be firm. But if you read the book, you see that that voice changes. It just changes. It starts to question. It makes mistakes. And by the end, it's heartbreaking. I mean, some of the best compliments I've had by people who've read the book are, I cried the last third of the book. It was just heartbreaking. So, you know, it's quite, and the end, you can't even recognize. You can't even recognize the, you know, that it's the same person. So,
what in your mind, what are the fundamental differences between this Chinese parenting style and what most Western parents think of as the right way to raise kids?
I guess first I want to say that I describe early on that I'm using the term Chinese parent very loosely because I really mean, I met a guy from South Dakota, and after discussing it, he and I decided that his white working class Irish immigrant dad had definitely been a Chinese mother, you know, and I really think it's more of an immigrant thing, a kind of a tough, you know, because I've all the really nice emails I'm getting are people from Haiti and Jamaica and Ghana and Nigeria who say, oh, my gosh, this is exactly the way that I was raised. I resented it when I was little, but now I'm a doctor. I just sent my mom flowers. I'm so grateful for what they did. And conversely, and most importantly, many, many Chinese people do not raise their kids this way. And I say that on page 2 of the book, and some of them because it really was awful for them. You know, I mean, this book is not championing this kind of parenting. And this is not backing away. You only have to read the very cover of my book. If this kind of high expectations and these harsh words are not coupled with just a deep sense of love, and if you can't listen to your child and know your child, it can be tragic. You know, so.
So where's the mistake then that Western parents make?
I would not say that there are mistakes. But here's a difference. I do think that, broadly speaking, Western parents are much more concerned about the self-esteem of their children. They worry about it all the time, and they tend to think that their children are very fragile, almost like able to break so quickly if you say anything harsh to them or if you question them or if you say, you know, the A-minus thing. I stand by that too. You know, it's not the case that I – listen, if you send a signal that if you don't get an A, that I don't love you – that is bad parenting. That is not what I'm standing for. But for me, this is the way I got it from my parents. It was sort of the message is rather, you know, I believe in you so much that I know that with hard work, you can be excellent. And I'm not going to let you give up. I'm going to be in there in the trenches with you. Now, if it comes to the cases in my own family where, you know, with my own daughter, I realize, okay, something's gone wrong. This isn't working. She's hating me. you have to pull back. I mean, love comes first. And that's what I did. That's what I did.
You, one of the chapters in the book is called On Generational Decline. And you say that the pattern in immigrant families goes something like this. You know, the immigrant parents, the generation like your parents, hardest working, you make all the sacrifices. The next generation, yours, first to be born in America, typically high achieving. They'll play the piano or the violin, attend great schools. And then the next generation, which is your daughters, Sophia and Lulu, you write, they will have wealthy friends who get paid for B pluses. They may or may not attend private schools, but in either case, they will expect expensive brand name clothes. Finally, and most problematically, they will feel they have individual rights guaranteed by the U.S. Constitution and therefore be much more likely to disobey their parents and ignore career advice.
You could tell that that's kind of humorous, right?
Yeah, well, sure. Because then you say, well, not on my watch. And you describe it as your anti-decline campaign.
Yeah.
Obviously, tongue in cheek.
But partly true. Absolutely. It's laced with, you know, I'm a law professor. I deeply believe in the U.S. Constitution. but I believe those. And this is where I wish, you know, we could get past some of the more, I don't know, anger about some of the misunderstandings. Because this is something I talk about and universally with my Western friends, parents. You know, we're all worried about what to do with our kids who are being raised in a much more privileged atmosphere than many of us were. You know, I mean, my dad wore the same pair of shoes for 6 years. He didn't spend anything on himself. And so, you know, in a way, he earned the right to say, you know, oh, you get a 96? Now, he didn't say that was, you know, he was like, let's look at the missing 4 points. You know, you can be better, you know. But I think I'm proud to say this, I don't want to raise spoiled, entitled kids who just want to buy more, you know, buy more technology, buy me this, buy me that. And the reason for that is it's not about me. I don't think that's going to produce people that are going to be able to be self-reliant and happy in their own future. You know, I think you need to instill a sense of humility, in a sense, you know, and a sense of gratitude and also a sense of inner strength, you know. So I completely stand by that, you know.
Amy Chua, her new book is called Battle Hymn of the Tiger Mother. And we'd love to hear from you this morning. 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786, or email your comments or questions to forum@kqed.org. What do you think of the shortcomings of the so-called Chinese parenting style?
I think, again, this kind of tough immigrant approach. One, I have a regret that I didn't give my kids more choice. That's the line that's been the outrage of the country, you know, that only the violin or the piano. Well, again, that is a little bit self-mocking because by the end, I let my child pursue tennis. She drops the violin. I realize, you know, if she doesn't love something, she can't enjoy it and she can't be really good at it, you know. So again, there's a journey in the book. So I would have given my kids more choice, but I have to be honest, not as much choice as I think a lot of Western parents do. Because I think that if you give a 5-year-old or a 10-year-old, if you say to them, look, honey, I want you to pursue your passions today and just like, you know, follow your choices, I think that kid is going to go and play computer games for 5 hours or just sit in front of the TV. You know, I don't think young kids can make their own decisions all the way through. You know, they need some sort of guidance. So some kind of balance, I think, between do whatever you want, pursue your passions, and the overly strict. It's got to be the piano or the violin.
Other shortcomings you mentioned in the book, sort of this idea of favoritism or comparing children.
I think these certainly the Chinese immigrants, or you know, just even in my own family, I think favoritism of any kind is just bad.
But is that part of the formula?
No, it's not part of the formula. I think it happens a lot. You know, Westerners these days, or forget Westerners, we're all much more self-conscious about parenting. And I think the generations before, they didn't think about it. So I do know a lot of my own Chinese relatives who made a lot of comparisons that were very hurtful, you know, even in my own family. And to be fair, I think Westerners, It's universal. It's almost like human nature. Of course there's favoritism. You may not be so open, but you know, think of all the great novels, great Western novels. It's often about the black sheep. No one would favor that.
You know, as I was beginning to read the book, I was thinking, well, you know, what about parents? Not everyone has the potential to be have, as your daughter did, a recital at Carnegie Hall, you know. And I was thinking, well, you know, and just taking it another step, you know, what if someone has a learning disability? And then you mentioned in the book that your own sister was born with Down syndrome.
Yeah.
What effect did that have on your parents?
It was a lovely experience. I'm glad you asked
from
me
the
that.
Very beginning?
Yeah. Well, From the very beginning, when my sister with Down syndrome was first born, my mother was just a new immigrant here, and all of our relatives back in Asia said, oh my gosh, you can send her back to, you know, in the institution, and nobody will have to know about this. And it was terrible. They have a very bad attitude towards disabilities. But my mother, here's one of the wonderful things about America, you know, she was exposed to sort of people with special ed people, other parents with kids with Down syndrome. And she soon, after like crying for the first, you know, week, she then just devoted herself to Cindy and, you know, learned all about the disability, became very involved in the activities. She applied Chinese parenting at its best to my sister. Contrary to what some people said, you know, she drilled math multiplication with her. She taught her to tie her own shoelaces and to pit cherries and to actually play the piano. She played for hours. And so, of course, you know, my sister's, she works at Walmart today, right here in Fresno. She has a boyfriend. She still plays the piano. And the best part, she has a wonderful relationship with my mom. My sister Cindy has incredible self-esteem. And you know what? After she just sent me this, she said, you know what? Since you can write a memoir, I think I'm going to write a memoir too. And she's writing one.
Good for her.
Yeah, it's really good.
And I think you also mentioned that she had won some gold medals in the Special Olympics.
Special Olympics. She's a swimmer. And again, you know, there's a difference. I mean, I think if you send, you know, the line about it's got to be gold. You know, in the end, it's kind of poking fun. And maybe one of the reasons I got in trouble is it's a sense of like airing dirty laundry. You know, you can make jokes in your own culture. You know, you can make Jewish jokes if you're Jewish. But if you air it, because a lot of people have jokes like this, you know, but I don't think it's about in the end about A pluses or gold medals done properly. You know, I think it's about really just about we're all trying to find ways to have our kids be happy, and we have different ideas about how to do that.
For those who may not know, you say you've got in all this trouble. I assume it stems not just from the book, but from this excerpt or essay you wrote in the Wall Street Journal, which they titled Why Chinese Mothers Are Superior. What happened as a result of that?
Oh, gosh, that article. I mean, I've just got – I get hundreds of emails. I feel like every 2 hours. I mean, they just pour in and they're very mixed. I mean, some of them, even with that article, they get the sense of humor. They're laughing. I was on the floor. But I would say, especially with that title, a lot of people read it straight that this person, this crazy person, thinks that all of us would be better if we, you know, demand A pluses and gold medals and force people to play the violin. They don't understand that the book is about a journey and my own transformation as a mother. I've had just terrible attacking my family. It's been bad. I'm so much happier that the book is out there because people are going to disagree with the book too. It's provocative enough. But I can stand by that. I am not backing away, you know, from my memoir. It's my life.
There's a very funny cartoon in The Atlantic, which I think just came out online. And it's a picture of President Obama with the president of China, Hu Jintao. And he's pointing at a picture and the caption is Obama urges Hu Jintao to put an end to ongoing Chinese human rights abuses. And he's pointing at a picture of a Chinese mother standing over her little girl at the piano. Do you worry that that you may be, you know, fostering stereotypes or putting the Asian community in a bad light?
Well, maybe that excerpt with that title, but my book is the opposite. I mean, my book is you know, people, Gish Jen, the wonderful Asian American novelist, said that the last third of the book, she just cried, you know, and I think it's about humanizing. Well, it's me, you know, and I see my book as first and foremost, it's a love story. It's how I tried to do the right thing. It's about the mistakes I made. It's about how I almost lost my daughter. I feel like I came up to the brink.
Describe that scene a little bit that you write about in the book when she had what most would call a meltdown.
Yeah, I guess it was a meltdown, and there were a couple of them, but this was one in public where we got into a cruel discussion. I used harsh words that I really regret.
She and her sister were about to do a performance.
This was actually just on vacation. It was on vacation, and she was just talking back, and it was disrespect. And things had been blowing up. You know, we were playing violin 3 or 4 hours a day. She was saying, "I hate this. I hate the violin." And I was pressing. And finally, we had this blow up where she threw a glass. "I hate you. It's all about you. You say you love me, but you don't. You know, it's you're selfish. You're a terrible mother." And this is the darkest moment of my life, you know, And I got up and ran, and I came back, and it was cold turkey. I mean, I came back. I said, okay, you know, nothing is more important than my daughter. I reveal at the end that my father himself was a rebel, hated his mother, left that household in Asia and never looked back. I mean, the book is so much more nuanced than, you know, so once the book is out there, people are still going to disagree with it, but it's so much better. I mean, it's really a memoir. It's my family story.
Amy Chua, again, the book is called Battle Hymn of the Tiger Mother, 866-733-6786. Let's bring some phone calls in here. Enmi from San Francisco is on the line. Good morning.
Hi, my name is Enmi Kendall, calling from San Francisco. I am in my early 30s, Korean-American, over from Seoul when I was alive. And I have to say, I so accept that the nation's having this conversation. I think that this conversation should come out 20 years ago. I've been having the conversation in my head, it seems, well.
You know, I'm afraid you're on a cell phone. They're having a really hard time hearing you, so I'm going to let you go. But I think her point is, this is a conversation that should have been happening a long time ago. She is Korean American. What are you hearing from other Asian American parents?
It's so mixed, and it's because the Asian community is so diverse, you know. So some people say, "Thank you for writing this. You know, this was my experience. It helped me understand my own mother so much, whom I resented, but now I realized she was trying to do it out of love. You know, she wasn't good at communicating that love." Other people at the other extreme, and this has been the most painful for me, is this is a terrible method. You know, it was applied to my family and terrible things happened. I hate my mother forever. I just feel, I wish that they would understand that the book is actually very sympathetic to that.
Let's go back to the phones. Try again. David in Sacramento. Good morning.
Hi. I've been listening on the road. I'm on a cell right now. I think the book is extremely interesting, and more books should be about the insight of this of course, stereotype about Asians or Chinese Americans having better rearing patterns and success and so forth. But the my reality here in Sacramento is I don't see the Chinese American or Asian families being in any way superior, and I understand the book is a memoir, so it doesn't attempt to explain everybody's roles and lives and so forth. I'm also a parent, and I work very hard, so my son was somewhat neglected, and I find very interestingly, somehow miraculously, he's gotten better grades, and he's now headed to the UC.
Huh. David, I'm going to ask you to stop right there because we're coming up to a break. But Amy Chua, do you want to respond to that?
Yeah, I could not agree with you more. I think that there are many ways of being a great parent. You know, and some people have to work. I'm not saying everybody has to do it this way. My husband grew up in an incredibly liberal household. Do whatever you want. He came out great. He was self-motivated.
He's also a Yale Law professor.
He's also, you know, I feel like show me a kid who's confident and happy and able to be self-reliant in the future, and there's been great parenting there. I really believe that.
All right. Amy Chua, again, her book is called Battle Hymn of the Tiger Mother. Much more to talk about in the rest of the hour. Give us a call if you'd like to ask a question or make a comment on what you're hearing in this hour on Forum, 866-733-6786, or you can email us. It's forum@kqed.org. Scott Schaefer here today for Michael Krasny. Stay with us. And welcome back to Forum. Scott Schaefer here today with my guest, Amy Chua, author of Battle Hymn of the Tiger Mother, a story about her, I guess, learning curve with her two kids, Louisa, Lulu, and Sophia. Taught you a lesson. What was your daughter's how have they reacted? They're now 15 and 18. How have they reacted to this book?
They are incredible. They are so sweet. That's one thing. You know, there are these harsh words about me, but I am so proud of the girls that I've raised. It's not just that they're good students. That's such a tiny part of it. They are confident, generous, kind girls, you know, and they text me, they call out these nice things from the internet and send them to me. Hang in there, mommy. We love you. And my oldest daughter wrote an op-ed. She published a piece defending me against my wishes.
And how are their, how about their friends? I mean, do they see you as being a tiger mother?
You know, it's funny that their friends never knew that I was really this, you know, it's kind of a closet practice, like I say. And they all think I'm really nice.
Little do they know.
And they've been so supportive.
All right, let's try the phones again. Terry is on the line in Santa Rosa. Good morning.
Hi, this is Carrie, and I have to apologize. I haven't read the book, but I did read the news article and all the hubbub over the book. I think that a lot of your points are absolutely right, that Western parents, me being one, oftentimes are too easy on their kids and way too worried about self-esteem. I have four children. My son, well, all of them are straight-A students in high school. We never really pressured them. One is graduating early from UCLA and is already employed. One is at Stanford, one is heading to Harvard, and the other one is still in high school.
Oh, my gosh. So, congratulations. Jeez.
Thanks.
And you were able to be nice.
Well, I don't know. They might not say I was nice. But I think that your point, and it's unfortunate that most people can't get the humor in the book. It sounds like it's there. I'm going to run out and buy it. But I think it's also indicative of our education system, that many teachers and high schools teach from a liberal slant and say that it's more important for the kids to feel good about themselves, which is important, as opposed to raising the bar. And I firmly believe that if you raise the bar, children will strive to achieve it and often surpass it. So those are my comments.
All right, Terry, thanks so much for the call. You know, one of the things your critics have said is that, you know, what about suicide rates among Asian American girls in particular, and concerns that this sort of parenting and the emphasis on success and getting A's that might be contributing to that?
I think that's a great point. I mean, again, if you read, you know, the last third of my book is I just feel lucky that I knew when to stop and when to pull. You know, when I read back on the book, it's in a way, it's like I just got myself into this frenzy almost, you know. And when I finally was able to step back and say, wait a minute, just get a life, get a grip, you know. And I hope I think there are risks like that. Now, to be fair, I think that we owe our teenagers more than just throwing around anecdotes and statistics poorly, because other people have sent me other statistics. It is also the case that if you look at teenage suicide as a whole, there are many greater causes of suicide: substance abuse, alcohol, parental neglect, right? So you have to – I think there needs to be studies about what works, how much – you know, how can we have high expectations but know when to stop, you know, but not just indifference. And there's bullying and there are gender issues. So I don't know. My heart goes out to those people. I feel like, hey, that's what I'm trying to say in my book. But I also think that we have to be more careful and try to be more rigorous about it, because it's just too big a tragedy.
866-733-6786. Kevin in San Mateo, welcome to the program.
Hi, my name is actually Kendrick.
Oh, hi, Kendrick.
Hi, I was born in Hong Kong, and I grew up there until I was 10 before moving to North America. And I remember around kindergarten or so, my dad locked me and my sister in the bathroom until we would learn our Chinese multiplication tables. And at the time, you can imagine we were quite angry with our father. But, you know, over time, as things passed, we didn't really resent it. We really appreciated that kind of pushing. And as a result, for me, I ended up going to an Ivy League university. I'm in law school now, and I'm really grateful for how my parents pushed me. And that memory of being in the bathroom, learning multiplication tables, probably a memory, not so much one of pain.
Amy, you can relate to that.
I can really relate to that. And thank you for saying that, because, you know, it's not like we're advocating this, right? This is how I feel. It's my position's been taken out of context. It's not like you're saying, hey, everybody, lock your kids in the bathroom and drill. No, but it's more like you look back and you realize that what your parents, as long as there was a foundation of love there that you finally saw, you know, it can also produce wonderful results, including a great relationship with your parents.
Why do you think you were so driven about this? I mean, it took 13 years for you to finally relent when Lulu had her numerous meltdowns.
Yeah, I do come from a family that emphasizes academic excellence and sort of depth. There are sides of this that I am very proud of. I say that, you know, for me, the classical music instruments represented the opposite of vulgarity and spoiledness and crass consumerism. You know, just buy me an iPod, buy me this, buy me that. I feel like, you know, just apply yourself. And I do think there's something about achieving excellence that is just sort of deep and meaningful in and of itself. You know, not about like a way to get into college. Just when you play beautiful music, there's something that's just very rewarding about that. But I will say that one of my own shortcomings, and I've gotten this from a lot of the nasty things that people send me, but I agree with one, which is, you know, what is success? I mean, how about ethical superiority? You know, how about giving back to the community? These were things that, to be honest, in a lot of immigrant households are not stressed. And to be fair to them, it's because they're talking about survival. You know, when my parents came, they had just come from endure Japanese World War II hardship. So it's like, yeah.
But I'm sorry to cut you off. Those are things, though, that you didn't allow your kids to do, like volunteer, for example, with a community organization.
Well, actually, I did do that. I mean, my kids fought back, you know, so it's just a snapshot. My kids do a lot of community service on their own. These are part of the arguments. But yeah, I think that's a fair criticism. I was always, let's put some more time into the violin. And you know, I think that there are, every family has different values. And, you know, achieving excellence and aspiring to those values, giving 100% to those values, even if it's like spiritual or, you know, community, I admire that. You know, it's not what I emphasize, but I admire it.
You say that, you know, every family has its own values, but it seems like from where you're coming from, it would be hard not to be judgmental when you're out in public and you see Western parents or any, you know, whether they're Western or not, but parents being, you know, coddling kids, as you say, slathering them with praise, I think was the phrase you used.
Yeah, well, the tone is a little bit, I really don't think, yeah, you're right. I mean, it sounds like that. I don't myself feel like I tend to judge when I see people that I judge them. But I do have some firm views that that's not the best way to instill self-esteem. So I'm not going to do it.
So you're not going to say, you're not one of those parents at the softball game or who would say, good job, you know, when they strike out.
No, although I have to say I've changed a little bit after the crisis with my daughter. You know, in our big fight, she said, why do you only say negative things to me? You know, why do you never say anything good? And for a long time, I was very smug about it. That's the judgmental part. Oh, other parents just, you know, slather praise. I mean, that's partly I was making, again, I was criticizing myself if you look back after you've read the book. But these days, I'm actually a little bit nicer. I'm a little bit more good job because I don't, you know, you just have to listen to your kid and know him.
And you have dogs.
Oh, boy.
Which
yeah.
You forbade
this dropped
initially.
Out of my story. This is the funniest part of my book, my favorite part. I hope somebody picks up on that someday. I tried to apply Chinese parenting to these cute things, and I'm the worst. They can't do anything.
Your husband said, don't you have higher aspirations for the dog?
Oh, I said that.
You said that to your husband. Sorry, yeah.
Yeah.
Let's go back to the phones. Catherine in Alameda, welcome. Catherine, are you there? She's multitasking.
Yeah,
hello.
Hi.
Go ahead. You're on the air.
Oh, okay. I just wanted to talk about how my parents were Vietnamese immigrants. However, when my dad came to the U.S., he became a really, really successful doctor, whereas his siblings were struggling a little bit more. So my dad really spoiled me and my sisters, whereas my aunts and uncles were much more strict with their kids. And today I find myself struggling with school and looking for a good job, whereas all of my cousins are successful engineers and surgeons and things. And so I kind of wish that my parents had been a little bit more, you know, strict and more firm with me instead of coddling me and, you know, making me feel more entitled.
Pushing you a little more.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's certainly the kind of the mentality that I had in mind, you know, when I said, not on my watch. I want my kids to be prepared for the tough world out there. But, you know, it's so hard. Someday you'll see. I know that your parents were doing the best that they could, you know. We just, none of us know what the right thing is.
All right. Thanks for the call, Catherine. Now let's go to Lee is on the line in San Francisco. Hi, Lee.
Hi. I'm Asian American, and listening to your guest, I'm grateful that my mom was not like you. I had the opposite. I had a very loving, caring mother, never judgmental, and I turned out okay. And
yeah.
I just think that there's a stereotype out there in the Asian community of almost like these robots who are driven to become doctors and lawyers and whatever. And, you know, what is wrong with just letting your kid find themselves And if the kid wants to be a, God forbid, a construction guy or a laborer, what's wrong with that? You know, I'm just trying to figure out why in the Asian community the parents are so driven to turn out these little engineers, robotic Asian kids, and the stereotype. Look at
But you know what? But I think, I mean, first of all, I want to say that my daughters too grew up in a loving, incredibly loving atmosphere, you know? So, but I think you're actually the one that's conveying the stereotype right now. The use of the robot really, it really upsets me because, you know, Mike, I don't think it's the case that just because you're good at math, you are a robot, or just because you're a beautiful musician. My two daughters, if you read this book, it is the opposite of stereotypes. I give my daughters all the best lines because they delivered them. I mean, the book is all like, it has me sort of this caricature, you know, I'll do this, and they're saying, you sound insane. You remind me of Lord Voldemort on, you know, in Harry Potter. So they're always the ones that kind of have the saner, sort of wiser outlook, and you can see how big personalities they are, how funny they are. My daughter just, you know, I mean, they're both confident, creative. But having said that, I just agree with you. I don't think there is anything wrong with what, it sounds wonderful. You know, again, my book is about, it's a memoir. It's about my family. It's about me and how I changed. I so agree with you that there, I have all these students, right? And I know I have many of my friends, they do all kinds of things. And as long as you're happy and you feel fulfilled, then, you know, all the power to you.
Lee,
you know, before you cut in there, you know, you did say that your daughter had a breakdown. What on earth is positive about that, especially if you were being constantly pushing her and saying negative things to her? What is positive about that? You know, because you wanted her to learn to play the violin and play Mozart by the time she's 12. Is that really important?
No, that was a bad moment in my life. That was not positive. That was the worst moment of my life.
Lee,
didn't have a breakdown. I would say she had a teenage blow up where she was screaming. I feel that I came very lucky that I came up to the brink. I do not think I crossed the brink. My daughter is thriving today. We're great friends. We're super close. But no. If you're thinking that I'm defending that, I am not. It's the opposite.
Lee, thanks for the call. Appreciate that point of view. Here's another email from Elaine, who writes, you were asked earlier whether you believed your recent verbiage was fostering stereotypes. Your response was more or less that maybe the article in the Wall Street Journal did it, but not my book. Why do you blame the Wall Street Journal for all this hoopla, or do you take responsibility for the themes expressed in the article?
My strict mom told me, and dad, always accept responsibility, never make excuses. So those are completely my words. I did not choose the headline, and I do not believe that Chinese parents are superior. And on the cover of my book, it says the opposite. my greatest regret in the excerpt, they are all my words, you know, but that the excerpt doesn't convey that there's an arc to the book and that it's a journey and that there's a crisis and that I learn and I change. So, you know, but look, I have to take responsibility. That's partly why I'm out here talking, trying to clarify and, you know, and encourage
people. Like you're doing
people.
Damage control a bit.
Yeah, you know, I'm trying, but it's my fault.
How is your own family, your family here in the Bay Area? You grew up in El Cerrito and Berkeley. How are they reacting to all this?
My parents are so upset. I mean, they are so supportive, but they're very upset. I think they feel that I've been deeply misunderstood.
And mostly the Wall Street Journal or what?
Yeah, I think they feel that way, you know. But they're also, you know, I'm just so lucky. I'm so close to my nuclear family, but also my extended family. My parents, I call them all the time. We're talking about this all the time. And my three younger sisters.
All right, back to the phones in San Francisco. Conrad, welcome to the program.
Hi there. Great conversation. Professor Chu, I was curious, what did your husband think of your style of upbringing your daughters, and also what hand did he have in raising your daughters as well? And I'll take my answer off here.
Thanks.
This is actually a great question because, again, you don't get this from the excerpt, but if you read the book, you see that between the lines, it is not the case that my kids grew up in a really strict traditional immigrant household. Because, first of all, I'm not an immigrant. You know, I was raised in the United States, here in California. And my husband is very he was from kind of a liberal Jewish family, and he always brought balance to the family, you know, making them go explore in the woods and spend, you know, like a week at the lake and go to water slides. And it's true. I'm the call it stereotypical. I was like, you're wasting too much time. We need to get back to the practicing, you know, this is in my early days. But when my husband is one of those people that loves his parents, but he now does wish that someone had forced him when he was a kid to learn a second language or learn an instrument. He doesn't play an instrument. He was given the choice, you know, when he was like five, do you want to hang out with your friends or learn an instrument? Hang out with my friends, you know.
But he turned out all right.
He turned out all right.
Better than all right.
Yeah. And when Lulu started to really turn, my husband did intervene, sort of always united front, but behind the scenes, he and I talked, and I feel grateful for that. So I don't advocate I think we need a balance. I think we need to get, you know, maybe it's okay to have more self-discipline and high expectations, but at the same time, freedom and choice.
You say that your husband, Jed, provided balance, but, as I read the book, I thought he was absent from a lot of the book. And the moments he was in the book, by and large, he was having big arguments with you about the choices you were making and your style of parenting.
Yeah, my husband actually has a very strong personality too. And one of the reasons that he doesn't appear much in the book is because, you know, I cleared every page of this book with my family, my two daughters and my husband. And that means we have to agree. And, you know, my two daughters, it was hard enough to negotiate a scene like, no, it wasn't this way. It wasn't this way. But my husband, he was always saying, that's not how I sound. So I said, you know, he has his own story. He's going to have to tell it. I wouldn't say that we clashed in a really tough way all until the girls were teenagers. Because to tell you the truth, there was nothing to quarrel with until, you know, a lot of people are horrified, but I know my household. And until they were 13, my kids were happy. They had lots of friends, outgoing, great musicians, you know, and we started to argue way more when Lulu really rebelled, and I listened.
Did he say, see, I told you so in the end? Not in the end, but I mean, when you finally changed
your
style.
You know, I think people can't resist that line, but he's just a great guy, really supportive.
All right. Nick in Redwood City, welcome to the program.
Yes, hi. I just want to make two quick points. First one, I'm a Korean American. I was raised on the East Coast near Washington, D.C. by two loving parents. My father's a physician. He's a doctor. First thing was that, Ms. Chua made a great point before that I wanted to expound on, which was about, you know, that it was really a survival instinct for a lot of parents, to some degree, in their parenting style, to some degree, it was I would almost characterize it a lack of creativity. And now being born and raised in the United States and in Western culture, to be able to be instilled with things like creativity and parenting and such, I think it's, you know, that's where we as parents have two small daughters are a little bit free to be more creative in our parenting, and that's a gift that our parents got to us. The main point that I wanted to make, though, is I am absolutely furious. And if Ms. Chua does not want to blame the Wall Street Journal, then I'm very impressed, and I'm glad that you say that. But I think it's an outrage the way that these media outlets have essentially exploited the Asian American stereotype. And they love, I think they're, you know, cracking up watching the caricature and the whole thing unfold and this wonderful, educated and strong Asian American woman writing this book and just sticking it into this machine that just perpetuates stereotypes. It makes me very, very angry.
Amy Chua, there is some racism in some of the commentary.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. It's definitely been an intense week. It's been an intense week and a lot of it pretty bad. So, yeah, you know, this is what I like to think is, look, my parents applied this kind of strict immigrant approach, and they raised a strong kid, and I don't think I'm a robot. Nobody's going to say that this book was written by a robot, you know. It's very, I think it's kind of rebellious, actually.
What about Nick's point, though, about creativity and imagination?
I love that. I could not agree with him more. That's where I'm coming out, you know. I mean, I think he's lucky he saw it before me, although I always wanted to foster creativity in my kids too. You know, my oldest daughter said, Mommy, you know, you only put in the most extreme scenes in the book. People are not going to realize how much fun and how normal we are. And that's true, too. That's true, too.
Do you think that, I mean, some people would say, you know, you play the piano, you're so creative. Do you think there is not creativity in that? Is it more just rote learning?
Oh, it all depends. My daughter is the most creative musician, both of my daughters. So I also reject that stereotype that just because you're, you know, Asian and play music that you're not creative. Maybe some of them aren't, but my daughters, you know, I think you do need a foundation, a technical foundation first, and then that gives you the depth, and then you can explore the sort of this emotional exploration and creative exploration. I think people oversimplify that. They say, oh, are you a rote repetition person or a creative person? I think the relationship between those two is much more complicated, and I'm pretty sure the scientific studies actually bear this out, although it's not my area of expertise.
Nick, thanks so much for the call. Any regrets in the way you wrote the book? Not so much in the publicity around it.
No, I love the book. You know, it's just going to be a hit or miss. I have to tell you, I have people coming up. Well, some people just don't hate the book, okay? But other people say, oh my gosh, I related to every page of this. I got the humor. You know, some people said I laughed so hard my stomach was hurting. So I'm proud of the book. I think there's a lot of irony. There's a rebelliousness in it that's like from the beginning that belies the, you know, the strike part.
Amy Chua, her book is called The Battle Hymn of the Tiger Mother. You're listening to Forum. And this is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio. And for more information about how to support KQED, go to kqed.org. I'm Scott Schaefer. And let's go back to the phones now. Kathy is on the line in Portland, Oregon. Welcome.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Amy, I loved your book. I read it. I couldn't put it down.
Thank you.
See
somebody.
I am not Asian American. I appreciated it as a memoir and highlighted several takeaways that I liked in the book. I would like to say shame on the Wall Street Journal for stirring up prejudice and racial generalizations when it wasn't about that at all. The memoir. Hello.
Yeah.
But taking my question is taking the most objective perspective you can, and given the benefit of hindsight, what one or two things would you have done differently?
As a parent or as an author?
As a parent.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the second quick question, would you consider a book, two, or essay addressing a thoughtful reviewer or instruction book on parenting?
Thank you so much for your nice question. I could really use it at this point. On the latter question, no. I'm in shell shock for this. I mean, I write about, like, you know, foreign policy stuff, and I put in 8 years of research for my first book and 5 for my second. I put in no research for this book because it's not a research book. It's just my own family and, in a way, more about my mistakes. So I'm not going to do that. But maybe somebody else with skills could do that. But your first question, I would have given my kids more breathing room and more choice. And you're going to love this. My daughter just had her 15th birthday, my younger daughter, and we had a big sleepover, 7 girls. And, you know, just I do have some – I wish I hadn't used such harsh words, lost my temper so much. And I wish that I had paid a little bit more attention to the individual personalities of my 2 girls. You know, they're just who they are. And we just don't have that much control.
All right. Thanks for the call. Here's an email from Lucia in San Francisco who writes, do you consult with any parenting books or is it all based on your own expertise with your parents? Did you discuss with your husband about parenting style before having kids?
I didn't consult any parenting books. I maybe should have. But it was just so autobiographical. You know, I'm one of these people, like one of the earlier callers, that had this incredible experience. So my parents were extremely strict, often used harsh words, but they were always extremely loving. I just always knew it. You know, they conveyed that. And to this day, when I look back, I feel like they're having high expectations for me, coupled with love. Is the greatest gift that anybody's ever given me. That's why I was so overconfident. I'm going to do the same thing. I'm going to give my kids the same gift. And it didn't quite work out so smoothly.
All right, let's try to sneak another call or two in. Jennifer in Petaluma, welcome.
Thank you so much. And Amy, thank you for writing this book. I wish I had had it a few years before my kids got to be teenagers.
I bet they're great.
Well, I loved it. It was a complete page-turner, and I really appreciate it as a memoir. And I also want to thank you for helping me channel the Chinese mother in me.
tiger mother.
I love it.
Yesterday, my son was, you know, begging for a sleepover, and he's not two. He's 16. And okay. Friends were lobbying for it, and I was negotiating with him for like 15 minutes, all this back and forth and to and fro, and I just thought, wait a minute. Where's my Chinese dragon mother? Come on. Come on. You can do it. So I said very clearly, I will be there when I said I would. I picked him up. We came home. He did some homework, and we had a really fun evening together. So I want to thank you for this book. It's helped me be a better parent.
Thank you so much. And I've learned from parents like you. We had the sleepover. There's got to be a balance. There's got to be a balance.
All right, Jennifer, thanks for the call. Let's see. Maybe we get one more call in here. Heather in Berkeley. Heather, welcome.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I read your book yesterday, and I found it very thought-provoking. I am a fifth-generation American and was raised in a Western style. My boyfriend of 3 years was an immigrant from Hong Kong, and I noticed that in our relationship, the parenting styles that we were raised with would emerge. So it became almost like a cultural learning experience for both of us that I...
Heather, I'm sorry to cut you off in the middle. We're a little short on time, but...
Basically, the focus of Asian parenting a lot seems to be on making the child better, like achieving more. And the focus of the Western parenting seems to be so the child has a better life.
Quick comment from Amy Chua.
I think that's interesting, but I just think that they shouldn't be mutually exclusive. Like, I think what I was trying to do is I want my kids to have a better life and to be happy, but I thought the best way to do it is to give them skills and show them that they can be better than they expected, you know? And I think there's some truth to that, but you also just, again, have to listen, you know?
Go ahead. I cut you off.
No, I think you just have to – every child is different. And in the end, I mean, love is the most important thing for me, you know, maintaining that relationship with my daughter.
All right.
Don't care if she's a – you know, I'd love it if she's a happy carpenter. I just don't know, you know, what it takes.
All right. Amy Chua, her book is called Battle Hymn of the Tiger Mother. Forum is produced by Kevin Gilrey and Judy Campbell with production assistance from Patricia Yellen and Christina Russo. Our interns are Suki Lewis, Adam Hill, Douglas Ray, Vinny Tong, and Julia James. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Forum's executive producer is Raul Ramirez. Our engineer today is Howard Gelman. I'm Scott Schaefer, here for Michael Krasny. Thanks for listening.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.